Hi everyone, welcome to the KidCast. Sorry it has been a hot minute since the last episode has been out. Things have just been a little bit crazy in the Thomas household. However, back to the main reason why you are here and listening. This episode is with the wonderful, brave and brilliant Becky Williams. So Becky suffered a missed miscarriage in February this year and really wanted to come on the podcast to share her experience and raise awareness of what a missed miscarriage is. So I do want to issue a little bit of a trigger warning because we are talking about miscarriage. So it may affect people who have been through that or loved ones of those who have been through that. So please do listen with caution. But we also do talk about parenting and parenting for her little boy, Joshua, who is three, and the similarities and the challenges that we're both facing at this moment in time. So let's get to it. Enjoy. Joshua is three.
He is, yeah, 3 and 2 months.
Take me back to find out you're pregnant with him.
Oh my gosh, so that was in lockdown.
Yeah.
We were doing an extension on our house and we weren't living there. We were back in my mum and dad's in their spare room, popping round now and again, checking on our house. And all of a sudden I realised I was a few days late.
Yeah.
I just snuck off and bought some secret pregnancy tests to check first. And then we did it in like the midst of chaos through the building site and found out we were pregnant during lockdown.
Wow.
So, and we were just, I'm just overjoyed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Overjoyed. So, how was pregnancy? Was it, did you have any trouble? Did you have morning sickness? Was it easy for you?
No,
what was it like?
I loved pregnancy.
Yeah.
The journey was amazing from start to finish. Mm-hmm. I probably had loads of symptoms. Mm. Sickness, I didn't have like throwing up sickness, morning sickness. Yeah. I had like nighttime queasiness.
Yeah.
And then I had a lot of, towards the third trimester, a lot of like hip pain, weight pain.
Yeah.
But it was like, it was an easy pregnancy, I think.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it, I loved it. Probably due to lockdown and not having to,
do you know what,
to work through it as well.
Yeah, do you know what? Funny enough, my sister-in-law, she's pregnant at the minute. She's due 1st of May, so relatively soon. And we had a little baby shower for her on Sunday. We were only talking about different pregnancies and I just said, like, you know, about like that idea of your typical little old woman who would come up to you and just touch your bump and speak to you. I said, well, I didn't have any of that because of COVID. So, like, for me, I mean, I'm quite, that would freak me out a little bit anyway. But so I was like, I didn't have that because of COVID. And they were all like, oh my God, yeah, it's such a difficult thing to wrap your head around if you haven't been pregnant in COVID. And I also think, because obviously both of us are pregnant in COVID at different times with our first.
Yeah.
We've got no idea of what pregnancy is like outside of those restrictions.
Yeah, like working through it, didn't have to do it. Well, I got sent home, being in school, the restrictions where you had to go home and you had to shield through it. So a lot of mine was like trying to teach shielding. Mm-hmm. Then everyone went into lockdown.
Yeah.
The sun came out. So I was just absolutely just loving being pregnant because I was just in the garden.
At home.
At home.
Feet up.
Yeah. Living at my mum and dad's where they were making all the food.
Waited on.
Waited on.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Ideal.
First pregnancy, absolutely loved it.
Yeah. How was birth?
Birth was complicated.
Okay.
So I was measuring big. I was big.
Yeah.
And then we had like a scan and they were saying he's going to be quite big. So mm-hmm. they predicted him like over nine pounds.
Oh,
wow. So yeah, a big baby.
Yeah.
I was a week over and they were like, obviously you can go 2 weeks over. And I was like, I can't go anymore. He's going to go to like 9.5 pounds.
Yeah.
I was gonna
how am I getting this kid
out? How am I going to get him out?
Yeah.
I wanted a natural birth
as
best as I possibly could.
Yeah.
So I went in a week over and got induced. There was like a little trio of us all pregnant at the same time, and they were telling me all their tips, like walk up and down, you'll dilate really quickly, bounce on the ball. So I did all that, and I dilated all the way really quickly to like 9 centimetres. And then from 9 centimetres to 10, it just took forever.
Oh, wow.
They told me, once I got to 10, they told me I could start pushing. I was delirious.
Yeah.
I think I was pushing for an hour, maybe. I don't even really know anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, they all kind of swarmed in. Like verbal consent forms, like you're going to have a spinal, you need a forceps delivery. And I was just whisked away. My husband was left in the room.
God love him.
And then, yeah, so it was emergency forceps delivery,
yeah.
Which took a long time to recover from.
I was going to say, did you have to have an episiotomy?
Episiotomy, yeah.
Oh, God.
Episiotomy, came out, obviously quite sore.
Yeah.
And then a catheter as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was a rough kind of delivery. Beautiful pregnancy.
Yeah.
A rough delivery. But at the end of the day, I would do it all again.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you feel like... I was only talking about this. I think it was in the last recording that I did. When I sometimes think that I've processed Bella's birth from a trauma perspective, but I don't actually think I have, although I still would do it again.
What was your birth like?
So Bella was water birth, but resuscitated because she was one of those like freakish statistic that swallowed water. When she was born, so her airways were blocked, so couldn't breathe. So she was born, she was rapid, it was called rapid delivery. So by the time my waters had gone, so from 4 centimetres to birth was 1 hour 47.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very fast. And because she came, and this is also like a thing I go back to from like a midwife perspective. I don't know whether we missed out on it because of COVID or whether this is just not the case, but nobody taught me about how to physically give birth. So no one said like, what contraction you need to push to this level, and that's it. I was just told, push.
Yeah.
So I pushed with all my might to get Bella out, obviously, when contracting. But then she was born too fast, so didn't get, like, the mucus squoze off her lungs. So she then developed colic later, but it was horrific because of the rapid delivery and all the tubes that she'd had to clear her airways and what have you after birth as well. I was thinking, why does nobody talk to you about that? That's quite an important.
Yeah, I think, I don't know if it was the COVID.
Yeah.
Well, we definitely, a lot of pregnant mums through COVID, I don't think we got kind of the same support.
No.
We missed out on a lot. I think we missed out on a lot.
Yeah.
I didn't know what I was doing.
No. Steen, I don't know about your husband, but Steen never came to any midwife appointments with me.
No, neither did Chris.
No. And he came to one scan.
Yeah, I think they were allowed the 1 20-week scan, and it was just, and he had to wear a mask.
Yeah.
And then even during the birth, we had to go in advance and go and get all the COVID tests.
Yeah.
He was only allowed to stay like a really short amount of time once the baby was born.
Yeah.
And then he was the only one that was allowed to
come back and visit
because he was the only one that had had
the test.
Tests.
I remember. I literally know.
I can't believe that it was even a thing.
Isn't it insane when you actually think about it? Because if I think about, like, my sister-in-law, she has growth scans quite regularly every 3 weeks, and obviously her and her husband go. And in my head, I'm like, why is your husband going? But then I'm also going, well, why would he not go?
Because we just went by ourselves, didn't we?
Yeah, literally just totted along, found where he needed to go, and got a scan or whatever it was. Yeah. The funny thing with Steve, though, he could come to the 12-week scan, which I turned out to be 14 weeks.
Oh, okay.
But couldn't come to the 20-week scan. Because it was in, they said the room was too small, and there was the sonographer, and a student sonographer would be present, therefore the room was too small to have more than 3 people in it from a COVID perspective.
It's so sad, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is when you think of it in that respect. Yeah. What were we talking about before I digressed? Bella's birth.
Yeah, Bella's birth.
Yeah, so I think, I remember thinking I wanted delayed cord clamping as part of what I'd done hypnobirthing to sort of, you know, as my sort of strategy to get through it, and which for me worked really well. I found it really beneficial and it did really help. But then the delayed cord clamping, I just remember thinking I wanted delayed cord clamping, and they've cut a cord and whisked her off straight away, and Steve had to press like a big red button on the wall. God love him, he must have been that flustered he pressed the wrong button. And then the midwife was screaming, no, the other button! And then this big alarm goes off, and it was just... I remember thinking, it was only 30 seconds, she'll be back in a minute. Like, I remember literally thinking it wasn't serious at all. And I think I probably was just relaxing from having
Yeah, just from giving birth.
Yeah. But I remember the look on Steve's face. He was like really concerned, really frightened. But it didn't frighten me. It was really strange. But again, I don't know whether that's a...
I don't know if that's a male thing, because when I was lying on the table, I can't see, and the baby gets whisked away. And I remember Chris was allowed to go over as they were kind of sorting out, and there was no initial cry from Joshua. And I think after it all, and obviously once he heard that cry, he just said, like, I just dreaded going back to the table to say, like, something was wrong.
Yeah.
Because I was just lying there, couldn't move, and he'd gone over. But obviously, thank my lucky stars, there was a cry, and... Yeah. But yeah, the emotions for obviously partners as well.
Yeah.
Trying to support us going through it.
Yeah. It must be chaos for them as well. I don't think we actually... I mean, I know they don't deserve a lot of credit in that minute because, you know, you've got a human being coming out of you, but they do deserve a lot of credit on the other hand for watching someone you love go through that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Must be hard, I imagine. Yeah. So, we've talked about this not over messages, haven't we? Not sort of on the podcast, but the sass and the attitude and the outright deliberate defiance that I have now is like nothing I've ever, could ever imagine from my child, who, rewind, 4 months ago, was really well behaved, listened really well, did as she was told, within reason, to get me wrong. But now we're approaching 3, and it's just the three-nager.
Like I said, we've got a three-nager on our hands. Yeah, 2. The terrible 2s didn't really happen at all for us.
Yeah.
It's three-nager for us. And he can be just absolutely brilliant. Yeah. And then it's just the defiance, the screaming, the not listening. Yeah. He is the boss.
Yes!
In his eyes.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, when was it? I think it was last week. So, Steve is a PT, so he's at work before I'm at work, and at work after I'm at work. So, I always liken it to being, I'm like a part-time single parent. I'm obviously not, but we went to Aldi one night last week, and it was that bad. She threw herself on the floor. She was kicking and screaming, and another child, she must have been about 8, just walked past and just looked at her and, like, smiled at me. And I was like, I know. What do I do with that? But where does that come from?
It's insane, isn't it? I do everything I can to get round Aldi as quickly as I possibly can with Joshua.
Yeah.
And I will do whatever I need to do. I will give him my phone. And I'll put YouTube on, and I'll have my list, and I will dart around. And if he sees something on the shelf that he wants to eat, I am going to probably buy that and give it to him straight away so I can get round the shop.
Yeah. Do you know what? It's really funny you mentioned about your phone, because Steve and I always said,
Oh, I'm so anti-phone, but...
Excuse me. I was always that person, like, no, that won't be me.
Yeah.
They won't have a phone when we go out for tea. They can have a colouring book and some colours. Oh, don't get me wrong, the colouring book and the colours are still there. They just get lashed. So
I bring it all.
Yeah.
I bring the colouring book. I bring his little bag, some cars.
Some treats.
Some treats. Yeah. But also I bring the emergency iPad.
Yeah. It's just needs as well a lot of the time. I just find Bella will... How can I say it without being quite controversial? Like, publicly behave better if she's got something, whereas she will, which it doesn't bother me, but I'm always conscious about other people. Like, if you've gone out for food and you've gone out for dinner and other people are trying to enjoy their time.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, if we're at home, there's never a phone on the table.
Oh, no.
You eat your dinner and that's it. Tough titty type of thing.
Yeah, well, you can kind of, if they're not eating at the table, we go to, like, our timeout step and stuff. Yeah.
We haven't got a timeout step. Maybe we need to get a timeout step.
I watched a lot of episodes of Super Nanny.
Yeah.
And just was listening to strategies. I didn't really want one. It's all these things. Like, I'll never have a timeout step. I'll never let them listen to a phone or an iPad. And I just have to adapt.
Yeah. I think it's finding the thing that works, isn't it? I know it sounds like it's trivial, but I remember seeing something about... If you talk to your child's friends about how, like, when they've done good behaviour or how proud you are of them, they will, like, take that on board as if you praising them to somebody else. Yeah. So I don't know if Joshua's got anything, but Bella's got, it's called Percy. He's a panda and he goes everywhere. So if you ever see us in the street, the panda with her everywhere we go. And I sometimes make a point of telling Percy when she's done something really good and how clever she is or how, you know, kind she is
that's
for doing
a really
that.
Good technique.
Yeah, and
she
absolutely loves it. Like her self-esteem, you can literally see it in her. But from like a, if I tell her not to do something and I say, that won't make mummy happy, she just laughs at me. Oh. And I'm like, what the frigging hell do I do with an almost 3-year-old who's just laughing at me?
It is really difficult to navigate.
Yeah.
And especially when, well, like you said, you kind of look after the most during the day. Yeah. I'm kind of the same during, especially like half terms.
Yeah.
Because obviously Chris goes to work and then he doesn't go to childminder during the half terms.
Okay.
I take those half terms and it's just me and him. So like literally I finish school tomorrow and then I've got him for
2 weeks.
2 weeks. And all the other teachers are like, I can't wait. I'm counting down.
Mm-hmm.
I can't wait for this relaxing like 2 week break. And I'm like, obviously I can't wait for a break, but it's just not a break.
It's not a break.
No, it's full on.
No.
And I have to try and fill the days.
Yeah.
And these days are expensive, like everything's expensive.
Aren't they just, it's insane. We went to, where did we go? I mean, it was lovely, we went to Windmill Farm. I think it cost like 50 quid in the end.
It's expensive, isn't it?
But I mean, it was fantastic, but I was like, 50 quid just to keep her entertained for like an hour and a half. Because by the time you've gone around the animals once, and you've got on the train, and you know, you've done a bit of a petting zoo, she's done then.
And there's a little shop as you go out.
Yeah, of course there is.
Yeah, even like, sometimes go in just the park, so like Croxteth Park, even if you just go there to go to the park, change the scenery, but you still, there's like ice cream van there and...
Do you know what I will say?
Cafe.
I went to Croxteth Park a couple of weeks ago with a friend, with her little girl as well, and we went to the ice cream van to get Bella an ice cream, and she said to me, is it for the baby? And I said, yeah, and she gave it us for nothing. She made like a little baby ice cream, it was like a one little cone, a bit of ice cream, a flake, some sauce, and she just said, I said to her, I went to pay, and she went, no, honestly, I won't charge for the little ones.
How kind is that?
And I actually thought, that is so kind. I mean, they're like 4 quid.
They really are, are.
And then when you go, you reluctantly say yes in the first place to sort of get a one. I was like, 4 quid, she's going to have 3 licks of it, and then it's going to be in the bin.
Yeah.
But if I don't, I'm the world's worst mum for not letting her have an ice cream. So yeah.
They are expensive.
Yeah. So yeah. What do you think is your biggest challenge with Joshua?
Oh my god, that's really difficult. Currently, at the moment, what is he doing at the moment that's really difficult? Just the not listening.
It's hard, isn't it?
It's the not listening. So, the biggest thing is, like, obviously he's really good during the days because he's not tired, and then I pick him up, and then it's, like, the tea, and then it's trying to, like, bathroom and bedtime routine. Mm-hmm. So it's like just simple things like trying to put his pyjamas on and he'll just want to bounce wild on the bed. Like mummy says, come and put your pyjamas on.
Mm-hmm.
One leg, two leg. And it takes ages.
Yeah.
And it's just the not constantly. If you don't listen, you're going to be minus a bedtime story. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
But it's just, I don't know how to navigate it. It is really difficult. So it's like, right, Joshua, 3, 2. And then he'll go 3, 2, 1. And he'll imitate me.
Yeah.
And it's like, deep breaths. Yeah. He's going to bed.
I know. It's really hard.
We haven't got a night.
We haven't got a nighttime routine because a few different reasons. So I used to work, before I started working at home, I used to work in Manchester, so it was quite a drive home. So Bella would either be with like family or with stay dependent upon what night of the week it was. So trying to install a routine where you're at different people's houses or with different people, it was just
really difficult.
Really difficult. So when did I change my job? Last August. So she would have been coming up for 2.5, just thereabouts. Yeah, so she was 2.5 in October, so call it 2.5 for ease. But by that point, she already knew that she didn't have a routine. So trying to put a routine in place, it's just been impossible.
Has she got a bedtime routine now? Or
Not really. A lot, no. She prefers to fall asleep with you.
Yeah.
So whether that be on the couch, having a cuddle with a blanket, she likes that.
Yeah.
And she will do that. But if I say to her, it's time to go to bed, we have a meltdown. But if I say to her, just come and sit with mummy and have a little rest, then she tends to
just calm down, wind down, fall asleep.
Yeah. She likes to fall asleep in the car as well, so if she can't fall asleep in the house, I know I shouldn't, but for an ease, I just go, just put her in the car.
Yeah.
Just go for a drive.
That's what we used to, that's what I used to have to do for all his, like, naps. He would only, he would never fall asleep naturally in the house, never get tired. It would have to be a car ride, and I'd literally drive around to get him sleep and carry him out and put him in the pram, or it would have to be a pram.
Yeah.
Like some motion, to get him to sleep. He doesn't have naps anymore.
No.
That was a sad moment in my life.
I know.
I just naturally let them like die out, but it was really sad. So now it's like full on from early morning. He gets up early, like 6 to half 6, non-stop until bedtime's 6:30.
Yeah. It is a long day, isn't it?
It's a long day.
It is. Entertaining them for that length of time. I find it exhausting. Like some people say, like, you know, like you mentioned about having time off.
Yeah.
To me, that's not time off. It's just, you're just in full time, your other job.
Yeah. Just,
break.
It's and quality time with mommy.
Yeah.
But I'm definitely not having a break from my work.
Yeah.
So I am like full year round job.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. What do you think is your biggest reward?
Oh, everything to do with him. Him himself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Him himself is my biggest reward. The cuddles, the smiles, every milestone, every achievement. Like, I wouldn't change anything. The hard times are hard, but I would never change anything. Like, he says, I love you, Mummy, all the time. He's my best friend, and he says, I'm his best friend, and I love that.
God, love him. Is he a Mummy's boy, would you say?
Yeah, definitely.
Definitely.
He loves Daddy as well, and he loves all his family, but I would say he's definitely a Mummy's boy, probably because of... He's with me 24/7, apart from when I'm in work.
Yeah.
He's with me.
Yeah. What does Chris do?
He works in shipping. Oh. So he's like kind of like 9 to 5.
Yeah.
Like office job.
Okay. So, Joshua was 3 at the end of January.
Yeah.
And you and Chris had decided that you wanted to have another baby.
Yes.
So at what age was Joshua when you started trying for baby 2?
I think we started, well, we definitely knew my sister was getting married.
Okay.
in the summer.
Yeah.
Like kind of spring, summer. Mm-hmm. And I was bridesmaid.
Yeah.
So I don't know why, I wish I'd never, but in my head I said, we'll try kind of after the wedding.
Yeah.
Ideally, we probably should have just, when we decided months before, we should have started trying because... Yeah. It takes a long time, doesn't it? So we started trying, as we do. And then we found out, I think we tested right at the bank smack at the start of 2024. Mm-hmm. So we tested and couldn't even believe it, pregnant again. Mm-hmm. We'd wanted this for so long. I think it was literally like New Year's Day or the day after. So amazing start to 2024.
Yeah.
And then we just kept it. We kept it between us. And again, this is something now in hindsight, after kind of, obviously I'll talk through kind of what I've been through. In hindsight, this whole like 12-week mark, keeping it secret. I really don't know if I don't think I would ever do that again.
Yeah, interesting.
Don't know kind of what other people feel on that. And I know why they say the 12-week mark now, but because it was just between me and Chris for so long, when I had my miscarriage, I hadn't even told anyone that I was even pregnant. I mean, some people might have kind of guessed I was pregnant and not said anything.
Yeah.
But the first time I told anyone was after kind of finding out that we'd lost the baby, and I had to ring my mum, crying down the phone, saying I'm coming straight to yours, saying I'm pregnant, but I'm not pregnant. I need to speak to you. Mm-hmm. And it was just traumatic. Mm-hmm. So... Yeah, we found out. I had all the symptoms. We were just overjoyed. I was just couldn't wait to be pregnant again, have a little brother or sister for Joshua. Yeah. Trying to think back because it's so fresh, but also like hard to remember as well.
Your I'm still kind of going through.
Like I said, some days I have like really good days, and some days I'm really quite low still. So yeah, I had all the symptoms. The normal things, so like sickness.
Yeah.
I was absolutely starving all the time.
Yeah.
And the only thing that would kind of stop the nausea was kind of eating.
Yeah.
So people must have just been like, oh my God, she's eating so much food. I'd like step out of my lessons and my colleagues would like step in for like 2 minutes and I'd just be like, oh, just need to go and get like my bottle of water. But really I was just starving.
Yeah.
And I needed to go and get like a cracker or something. Yeah. I had the belly. So the belly was coming because normally second pregnancies... Yeah. The belly comes, so I had like my belly, I had like the sore boobs, the constant frequent need to go to the toilet, mm-hmm. and that was just constant, so all the way up until, I think I was about 11 weeks pregnant, mm-hmm. and we'd booked a private scan, just locally,
mm-hmm.
Just to go and get kind of like a picture and just go and see it before we had our 12-week scan the next week,
mm-hmm.
and we went into the private place chatting normally at the reception, dead excited, went in, like we did the first time because we did it through COVID, mm-hmm. went to the same place, we were so excited, the screen popped on and I just knew, I could see like it wasn't the same kind of like image as what it was with Joshua,
mm-hmm.
and the sonographer was really quiet as well just for a few minutes, I think she turned and said, I'm just taking some measurements, I could see like my uterus and my sac. But there was no baby. I couldn't see the baby in the sack. So I just knew. And I can get goosebumps now kind of thinking of it. And she just turned to me and just said, I'm really sorry. And I just burst. I just lost it. And my husband was holding my hand. We were trying to take it all in. She turned around. She originally said it was a embryotic pregnancy. And obviously didn't have a clue what that meant. I'm hoping I'm getting the terms correct because I'm no expert in it. And she said, which hospital are you going to? So it was Ormskirk Hospital. She said, I'll phone right through. We'll get you a scan tomorrow with them.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not good news. So we just need to prepare you for your scan tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So we left. We just left. We paid for that appointment. We left. That's when I rang my mum. Started Googling what an embryotic pregnancy was. And then went in the next day and they did, well, I went in the next day and they normally, there's another normal side where you're pregnant, where mm-hmm. everyone's got their bellies. And that's where I went from a normal scan the mm-hmm. first time round with Joshua. This time round, there was like the early pregnancy unit
mm-hmm.
and it was all set up and you could see it's just to the side and it was set up for losing your babies mm-hmm. and miscarriage. And there was like a separate sonographer there. So we sat in this room, there's posters all over the wall. And like you can see all the leaflets ready to hand out to the parents.
Mm-hmm.
And we were just in tears the whole time. They took us through and they didn't do a belly scan this time. They did a vaginal one. Yeah, which again, I'd never had before.
Mm.
And this time... they said they saw the sac and they saw like a fetal pole as well, which obviously means like there was a baby there. There was no heartbeat yet, but they said, oh, you looks like you're measuring around 6.5 weeks based on the measurements. And I was like, oh, right, okay, normally there might not be a heartbeat. Then maybe I've got my dates wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to work my dates back. Even when I left, I constantly tried to rework my dates saying like, oh, if that had happened then, how many weeks would I be?
Yeah.
And it just wasn't working out at all. But you have that sliver of hope because they wanted to re-scan again in a week's time to see
just
if there was just in case to see if there was any growth.
Yeah.
And that week was just the worst week of our lives.
Yeah.
I obviously didn't go back to work.
No.
I was inconsolable. My husband was trying to process it as well and try and be strong for us. We had a really good network of people around us, family.
Yeah.
And some close friends who reached out as well and tried to support
mm-hmm.
me and Chris. And then we went back a week later. I think I'd kind of processed that it was probably going to be bad news, but you still hold on to that small percentage that we could be the miracle and the baby had grown. And they did it again, another vaginal
mm-hmm.
Scan. And they did say, like, there'd been absolutely no growth. And they were really sorry. And could you go back through to next door to the room and someone will come through and talk you through your options. And then in came obviously one of the nurses, and she went through the option. Well, she said to me, have you researched any of your options? Of course I'd researched all the different options. I have like an app that I had the first time round with Joshua called like What to Expect When You're Expecting. I don't know if anyone else uses the app, but it has like little forums on and people can post kind of their situations, and I was obsessed with it, just reading, obviously looking at like the different miscarriage options. So yeah, there was like three options you could have. You could naturally miscarry, but my body, for a missed miscarriage, it's called a silent miscarriage. So
what determines it to be?
Oh, a missed miscarriage. Yeah. So a silent miscarriage is your body doesn't accept it as a miscarriage. You're still kind of thinking you're pregnant and growing. Whereas I just thought a miscarriage was you would know that you're miscarrying. You just bleed and you miscarry, and that's probably just my naivety. There's so many different types of miscarriage.
I didn't know that. I only assumed there was the one.
Yeah, I knew about miscarriage. I knew miscarriage happened. I've obviously give condolences and said sorry to people that I know who have miscarried as well. But I just didn't know there was all these different types of miscarriage. So ours was a missed, it's a technical term, missed miscarriage. My body just wasn't accepting it, just thought it was still pregnant. So for me, the first option just was a no. Like, I wasn't going to just naturally let my body miscarry.
Yeah.
Because at that point, I was 12 weeks and still thinking I was pregnant.
Yeah.
And if the baby obviously had passed away at 6.5 weeks, quite clearly I still wanted to be pregnant, or my body did.
Yeah.
The second option was to take the medication. And that was probably the way I was going to lean originally, because then you take it and your body would naturally do it. But I was using kind of like, I was doing a lot of research, and then you take it and then you have to miscarry and you have to kind of see it. And I think contract, and kind of the longer you are pregnant for, the further along you are, obviously kind of the more... I presume the more painful, or the more difficult it is to naturally miscarry. So being kind of around the 12-week mark, I thought, I don't think I could actually do that. No, I don't think I could do that. I didn't want to... I've got Joshua as well. I didn't want to be, like, by the toilet 24/7. He'd still be at home. Yeah. And if I was in pain, I didn't want him to see me like that.
Yeah.
So the third option was a D&C, and that was the operation.
What's a D&C?
Oh, I don't know the actual technical term for it. Let me see. Dilation and... I'll tell you now. I do know, but... Dilation. Sorry.
No, don't apologise. We're just consulting Google.
Yeah, sorry.
No,
sorry. I don't even know how you pronounce the second one. A dilation and...
I feel like someone's probably shouting this.
I know.
Cuterage. Primary diagnostic procedure to sample the...
Take the lining.
Yeah,
of
the lining
uterus.
Of the uterus.
And obviously, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, I would just... A D&C, yeah. Like I said, I'm not technical medical terms, but yeah, D&C procedure. So that's what I opted for in the end. Again, quite nervous about the procedure. I've never had any form of... operation before. I'd never been put under before either, so I was terrified. But they went away and they said they'd get me in as quickly as possible and they'd phone me. So I didn't even have like a date for it, so I just went away still pregnant. Still pregnant. My tests would have been pregnant. I went away still pregnant, and then they called me later that afternoon, really late, and they said, we've got your appointment slot. It's going to be the next day. You need to go nil by mouth, and then you'll go down in the afternoon. It will be a small procedure. You'll be under for probably about an hour, possibly a little bit longer, but the procedure is about 10, 15 minutes. So I got myself ready. Joshua, we'd arranged to go to my mum's house and stay over.
Yeah.
So Chris could come with me, and then I could come back and have because you're in and out within the day. If there's no complications, so I could come home and kind of, you know, process what had just happened again and just kind of start recovering. So we went in. The waiting around for the DNC was again just so emotional. We were on a ward in Ormskirk Hospital, so it wasn't like the pregnancy ward or anything, it was like a ward above where you kind of go in if you've got any kind of concerns. And I was kind of in my own private room, which was really nice. I mean, Ormskirk Hospital was fantastic the whole way through.
Yeah,
I had a lovely nurse who looked after me that day. I couldn't, like, highly praise her anymore. She was fantastic. But I was outside the nurse's station, so I could hear, like, phone calls coming in of, you know, like, other women. And I could actually hear the calls. So they were like, I'm 18 weeks. I'm just started bleeding. I'm cramping. I could hear all these phone calls coming in. I'm 10 weeks. I'm so-and-so. And I was just like, I cannot believe this is happening.
The volume.
The volume this happens to women. I was just so unaware that it's... one in four people have a miscarriage.
Wow.
I just had no idea. I've probably been in contact with so many people who have had different forms of miscarriages. So I went down for the DNC. Obviously, Chris can't come. I go down by myself. I think I'm shaking when I go down. I'm that nervous. Again, they were all really good. The anaesthetist, the surgeon was really nice as well and came and kind of spoke to me. And all I really remember from the DNC is there was a clock above me and it said 20 past two. And it was like kind of like countdown, like 10, 9. I don't even think I even remember getting far. And I just woke up. It was done. And my baby was gone. And we wanted it so bad.
Don't worry.
Sorry.
Don't apologise.
And then they wouldn't let you go unless you go to the toilet. So I said, right, I'm going to the toilet. I want to go home. I want to recover. And it took it was just a lot of bleeding afterwards, just kind of recovering. I think I constantly bled for about 3 days. It was really sore. I think I tried my best to get some fresh air and I was walking down our road. I could barely walk. I just wanted to get out. Joshua was with me. I just wanted to try and be normal. It took a while, on and off bleeding, probably for about 2 weeks. And obviously it's still fresh, so I finished that bleeding. And then I'm kind of in that limbo space now because it is so fresh. It's only been really 2 months. And my body's not back to normal, so I'm just back to kind of just... We still want to try again. So straight away for me, I wanted to kind of take my ovulation sticks and kind of see if anything was happening with my body.
Yeah.
I'm just terrified that I'm not going to ovulate again. We won't be able to conceive again. Obviously, I don't even want to think about what will happen when we do get pregnant and kind of the anxiety that comes with kind of a miscarriage and then conceiving. So we're just in the place where I'm just waiting for that first period.
Did the hospital give you any sort of inclination of roughly when that will be, or
they give you a A4 sheet of paper?
Oh God.
And obviously they're really kind of go through, but it's an A4 sheet of paper. You go away with a booklet and an A4 sheet of paper and a number. Really, you only contact them if your bleeding doesn't stop after 3 weeks. Mine did. Or if you're bleeding like really heavily through a pad. But as far as I'm aware, like they said, the DNC was successful.
Is the DNC, you don't have to answer this if you don't want to.
Okay.
Is it done internally? Is it keyhole? How?
Oh, it's internally.
Right, okay.
Yeah, it's internally. And I don't know much about it apart from I had the stockings on, the gown, nothing else on. They put you to sleep and I guess they just position you to do
what they need to do
and they do it as best they can. And it was successful. I'm hoping there's obviously nothing. I'm hoping to get my period back at some point or I don't know if it's a miracle. I don't get my period back and I'm pregnant again. I don't know. Yeah. We just don't know yet.
That happens though. People.
It does. They say you're most. Yeah, they say you're most fertile in kind of this period phase, now.
Yeah.
So for me, I'm still on my folic acid.
Yeah.
We're still actively trying.
Yeah.
Some people aren't ready. Some people are. They say normally to wait for your first period.
Yeah.
But me being me.
Yeah. There's no harm in trying.
No, there's no harm in trying. Yeah, they normally want you to wait for your first period or a couple of cycles just so they can kind of date
that
if you get pregnant again. Yeah. But I've seen, again, lots of stories where they've managed to have a rainbow baby and they've not even had their first period.
I've heard that a lot, to be honest.
So I know it can happen, and then they've managed to find the date and it just all settles in. And,
yeah.
So yeah, that was the guidance. Kind of 3 weeks if there was any issues, call back. But that wasn't the case for me. And then period should resume. You should call your doctor, actually. You should call your doctor at the 6 week mark if no period has resumed.
Okay.
So that's kind of roughly where I am
where
now.
So yeah. What date did you have your D&C?
The 15th of February.
Yeah, so literally 6 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, so now my mind's working overtime again.
I can imagine.
Yeah, stress isn't good for obviously
no.
conceiving, but
you even your period just, is that
even
well,
yeah, or even period no.
Yeah.
But it's so hard. You can't help but overthink. You can't help but spiral.
Of course.
And it's really difficult because there is no one really to talk to.
Yeah.
Unless obviously there's someone that's been through the same thing.
Yeah.
I've got a couple of close friends who have had miscarriages, but different ones to me. So they've had ones where they've bled, and they've known they've miscarried. Yeah. Or sometimes, like, I mean, I do know someone who, I know a couple of people who've had missed miscarriages, but I also, as they've been really supportive. I'm really open. It's really personal to share about it, but also I'm dying to ask more questions at certain points, but also you don't want to kind of
be invasive.
You don't really want to drag up that story for them again numerous times. So it is difficult to know who to talk to. You're kind of looking for someone who's kind of going through it at the same time as you, which obviously people are, but I don't know anyone in my circle.
So tricky, isn't it?
It really is.
How so? Okay, so physical wellness aside for a minute, how are you emotionally?
I'm okay most days.
Yeah.
But also, I'm not okay.
Yeah.
We just want a second baby so badly.
Yeah.
But also, I don't want to push. Because it just probably won't happen then.
Yeah. It's so difficult, isn't it? Because the things that people would say to console you or to try and sort of make you feel better, I'm not going to say it because I don't want to do it because I've not been in your position, so I can't even fathom how you could be feeling.
And that's how I used to be, I think. And I used to be exactly the same because obviously I've known people to go through it. And you try and say the right things to help them or to say that you'll be there for them. And you are there for them all the time. But it's just so difficult.
Yeah.
But it is appreciated when people do say and they are there. And friends give me a hug when they can just tell. The closest ones can just tell when I need a hug. My husband is constantly checking in on me. And we have really good days. And then all of a sudden he'll say, it's normally when it's quiet and Josh has gone to bed. And he'll say, like, are you okay? Or how are you feeling?
Yeah.
And we'll check in with each other.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the best things that has had, like, for us. We have spoke about it a lot together.
Yeah.
And sometimes, like, I'll be having a really down day and I'll just cry to him.
Yeah.
And it'll help and the next day and I'll be okay. And you just do. You have to be okay. I've got a job, a full-time job. I've got Joshua.
Yeah.
I've got my husband. And you just do. You have to get on with things.
Mm.
And hopefully one day it will happen.
Yeah. I definitely do believe in everything happening for a reason.
even when it is this painful,
yeah,
and it is this heartbreaking and challenging, there will be, at some point in the future, there will be a reason for why what's happened has happened.
Absolutely.
And it will become clear. It's just when you're living in it, in that moment in time, when you're in that heartache and you're in that chaos, you just can't seem to work out why that has happened to you.
Yeah,
at that
it's very much, why me?
Yeah.
I can't believe I am the one in for, I can't believe it's us. It's happening to us. Why my body? Why did it happen? What? And you just don't know. You'll never know. We'll never know why it happened. Like, same for many, many women. Yeah. They'll never know why it happens. And some people go on to have reoccurring miscarriages. I think that's, again, like, a really scary thought.
Yeah.
Because obviously I've only had the one so far. So that's always in the back of the mind as well. But that's probably another conversation if eventually we do, and kind of going through someone who's had a miscarriage and then gets pregnant and kind of that journey.
Yeah.
Would be a whole different journey.
Yeah. I've had a few guests on here who have.
I've talked through.
Yeah. And I've had, I'm thinking one girl in particular, I'll send you the episode to have a listen to.
Fantastic.
Very similar to yourself, though. She had a miscarriage, but wasn't a missed miscarriage. It was what we would consider
what we thought a miscarriage was. Yeah.
And then she, again, didn't have her first period. She got pregnant before that, so it was in turnaround times quite quick.
Yeah.
And then was absolutely fine, had a really healthy pregnancy. She did say to me, though, she'd done, you can do like an early test, can't you, where it's some sort of blood test to determine the gender of the baby,
okay,
or the sex of the baby, I should say, rather than gender. And she'd had two girls at this point.
Okay.
And this pregnancy was a boy.
Ah, okay.
And then the pregnancy after, the rainbow pregnancy, was a girl. So they thought
they do say things about gender.
Yeah, that her, she couldn't
possibly carry
that male
gene.
Yeah, so it could even have been.
Yeah, we didn't know the the sex.
No.
Yeah, but I definitely heard that, like, certain women can't carry certain genders. Yeah. So it could possibly have been a girl. Yeah. We just don't know.
Could have been. I've even heard that. That's why people are so sick during pregnancy sometimes as well, because the body isn't really compatible with that. Yeah, gosh, it can be an absolute minefield, can't it?
Yeah.
As well. But I also think, in the same way that you've just said, you know, you can only empathise, you can't sympathise until you've been through it. I feel like that is also very true of every area of parenting.
Absolutely, yeah.
Like, you have an idea of what it may feel like to be in that position, but when you're actually in it, and you're in it for the first time, only then can you truly sympathise with what that feels like and what it's like to go through.
Yeah, definitely, I agree with that.
Yeah. Is there anything that we haven't talked about that you would like to talk about before I ask you our closing traditions?
No, I just really wanted to share my story.
Yeah.
It is still quite raw and fresh, and I'm really glad I did it. I was really nervous.
Yeah.
I'm glad I got to speak about Joshua too, and kind of going through that.
Yeah.
That age.
Yeah.
But no, I've had a lovely time. Thank you so much for inviting me on.
You're more than welcome. It's been fantastic to have you. And I think you've spoken so strongly as well. I don't want to upset you before I ask you our questions, but you were really eloquent then in what it was that you were talking about, and your very recent experience. So you should give yourself a massive, massive pat on the back for that, you know.
Oh, thank you.
You are really strong. Okay, closing traditions, we've got two of them.
Okay.
I should have told you this before. Some people like to be prepared, some people don't. I'm going to throw you in the deep end here. So, what is one thing you wish you knew about parenting before you became a parent?
Oh.
You can have a minute to think if you need it as well.
I definitely need a minute. You should have given me
It's sorry. I'm terrible for that.
That I wish I'd knew about parenting.
Yeah.
Oh my god, I have it.
Don't worry, we can edit this bit out if you need to.
Yeah, you might need to edit this bit, because I literally am blank. I want to think about parenting.
You did say before, though, about the hard times are hard.
Oh,
and the good
absolutely.
Times are good. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. The highs are so high.
Yeah.
But the lows are low.
Yeah.
And I'm a quite a patient person, being obviously a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
I can't swear, I'm going to be patient, obviously.
Yeah.
Secondary school is really tough with the children, so I am patient, but Joshua tests me to my breaking point sometimes, and I do have to take a moment, but those highs are just unbelievably high. Mm-hmm. I am so proud to be his mum.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then the last one. This might be a bit easier for you to answer. If you were to give a top tip to new parents or expectant parents, what would your top tip be? And it can literally be anything from when baby's just born to anything up to what we are both currently living in.
I really want something like funny, but I can't think on the spot. Next time, give this to your guests in advance.
Yeah.
Top tip, just to work alongside your partner for about the whole journey. Don't try and do everything yourself.
Yeah.
I always want to try and do it myself, but you need that support, 100%.
Yeah.
I remember when he was born, and obviously you have no clue about feeding or anything, and we both used to wake up at the same time, and even though it was like one person's time to do the feed, we'd both go in together. So we were both having no sleep. It was bizarre. I can't even believe that we did this.
Yeah.
And maybe like 2-3 weeks after doing this, we were absolutely shattered, like bags. Yeah. We were exhausted. We were both doing it together because we both just, I guess, didn't want to miss anything.
And
we
also had for support as well.
For support, yeah. Because the winding process.
Yeah.
The winding process. That's taking me way back.
I could do an episode just on winding strategies.
The bicycle,
alone,
legs, everything. It would take us hours. So we just kind of did it together. I just actually can't believe we weren't getting sleep whilst the other one was trying to do it and then switch.
Maybe next time. That's your top tip to take forward.
That is the top tip. Absolutely. Get as much sleep as you can while one of you is stepping in to look after the baby.
Yeah.
And then just switch.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. That is my top tip. Get as much sleep as you can. Take the support. If someone says, I'll look after baby for an hour.
Yeah.
Then take it with both hands.
I have to say, I was very good at that.
I'm into your bed.
Literally, like, I think Bella, so we came out of hospital when Bella was 2 days old in the evening. And then she was 4 days old at this point, and Steve and I had left her with his mum. And we had to go and get some clothes because she was that tiny anyway. But I was just like, and I remember thinking, most people would like be like really shocked that they'd left their baby at 4 days, and I was like, no, you take her for an hour while I go to Boots and get her some clothes that need to fit her. You just need to I think as well, you need to accept that accepting help doesn't mean that you're weak.
Yes, that's exactly it.
Yeah, I think that's important to take away.
Accept help.
Yeah, always. Well, thank you again so much for being fantastic and for sharing your story.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
You're more than welcome, and I do genuinely really appreciate it.